Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. We have a paradigm shifter who is shifting paradigms all over the place. We have Steve Behrman, also known as the alter ego of Swami Beyond Ananda. And I love it when Steve comes on, when you come on, Steve, and we talk about, oh, maybe the changes in sociology and how people are changing. What are the goals? Are we reaching enlightenment? Are we reaching the basement? What's going on amongst people in our country, maybe around the world, and maybe in different levels of consciousness? What do you think?
Well, that's a lot of questions right there.
It's all the same question. You notice that?
It's all the same question. And yeah. Well, I don't know how much we've learned from sociology this past year. We certainly got to experience some sociopathy.
Very good.
And you know what? As I've said before, having Donald Trump as the face of the American empire, it's a much more appropriate face than we've had for a long time. We've been able to go along for years, you know, 8 years under the happy, happy face of Obama, thinking that because his heart is in the right place, everything is, that we are moving toward a better world. And as a matter of fact, the same military-industrial complex, fossil fuel complex, agribusiness, big pharma, all of these institutional
corporate
entities.
Buy-offs of possible evolution.
Yeah, so basically, the two political parties really, really must, as it's constituted now, serve the same master: those who pay the bills, those mm-hmm. who have the money. And so
the donors, call them the donors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And basically we have pay to play politics so that the constitutional system of the United States, including the balance of powers, has been thrown off balance because the power of money seems to trump, no pun intended, all of the other powers combined. So right now, In the election that we had last year, it wasn't much of a choice. We had the neocon versus the Genghis Khan.
And good way.
Either way, either way, it's a con. Either way, it's a con.
Oh, good, yeah.
The Democratic Party is where progressive votes go to die. And so one of the reasons why Hillary lost, Trump did not win, Hillary lost. One of the reasons why Hillary lost, there are so many of them, is that she represents the status quo of corporate politics, pay to play, increasing gap between rich and poor, the flyover country basically being ignored by the two political parties, particularly the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And so had the Democrats chosen Bernie Sanders, he very likely would have beat Donald Trump. But the Democratic Party establishment was much more interested in keeping their position than being in power, because if they were in power, then they would actually have to try to do some of the things that they've promised to the people, promises they can't keep without really confronting the deeper issues of the system, including the deep state, the military-industrial complex, and the fundamental corruption of our political system.
Good for you. Well, what about deep state? Can you talk a little bit about that, what it means? Some people don't really know what it means.
Well, I think that there's a number of different representations of quote-unquote the deep state. Let's just say that it is who's in charge of who's in charge. For some reason, there was a study done a number of years ago that showed that here there was a list of all of these things that 80% of American people wanted, and none of those things had come about because the money elites didn't want them. So just as we have the choice, like we had last year, to vote for one of the two corporate candidates, those are the very, very, very limited choices that our electoral system as it's constituted right now gives us. So there's a lot of dissatisfaction with two political parties, particularly on the part of young people. Recent study, 72% of millennials, they don't favor either party, and they would like an alternative to that.
Mm-hmm.
So So basically right now we're looking at the old system, the Caterpillar system, falling apart. And we're looking around for where is the butterfly coming together. We can talk a little bit about that. But, you know, you wanted to talk about the tax bill, all of these things. Essentially, the tax bill is the ultimate. It is the ultimate in pay-to-play politics.
But you know, it's the ultimate. It's an honest statement about what's really going on in a way, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So there's no – and I think that that's why my friend – and colleague Bruce Lipton says crisis precipitates evolution. We look around us, we see the chances of precipitation are 100%. That people are looking at this. This crisis is in our face. It can't be ignored anymore. We can't pretend that because we voted for a progressive candidate or there's a Barack Obama in office, that things have fundamentally changed.
No, you know what? Did you ever see The Truman Show? That movie?
Oh yeah, many years ago.
Okay, well, I'm just thinking lately. I used to think, God, it feels like we're kind of confined. Now I'm going, we are. We're actually confined, like we're in this little show, and we have these illusions of a democracy and so on, and we get lots of self-expression in a way. But I really begin to see the cage.
I think that's exactly it. That people are in their silos, they're expressing themselves, but because they're expressing themselves in their silos, there's not fundamental change taking place because the two sides haven't been having a conversation to compare notes, and go, what do we all know together that we haven't been told, that's been withheld, that's been conveniently denied by the powers that be in power? My friend Brad Blanton, who wrote a wonderful book years ago called Radical Honesty.
I have seen that.
Yeah. Yeah, he calls the collusion between the two parties. He calls it one party, Dem public rats. Isn't that great? Dem public rats. So I've launched my own radio show, Wiki Politicky.
Good, I love that, huh?
Front and center to turn the funk into function and leave the junk at the junction. And if you go to Ohm Times Radio, or go to iTunes, Wiki Politicky, WIKI. Politicky, PoliTiKi, Wiki Politicky, and go to the archives. You'll see a very interesting interview I did with the alternative left journalist Mark Crispin Miller and the alternative right commentator Paul Craig Roberts. And I wanted to get people who are outside the box on either side, I wanted to bring them together to see what they have in common, what they know in common. And it was an awesome conversation.
Was it catalytic? I mean, make people think.
It was catalytic because they both realized that they knew the same stuff. They were both talking about pretty much the exact same thing.
Wonderful.
Paul Craig Roberts had been a economic advisor to Ronald Reagan. Mark Crispin Miller had been a progressive professor at NYU. And he wrote a book in 2004 called Fooled Again, and it was about how voting machines and other nefarious deeds stole the election in 2000 and 2004 for George Bush against the Democrats. And the thing that shocked him most, because he did, you know, his publisher did all kinds of due diligence. They had all of their legal bases covered. What shocked him the most is that when the book came out, there was not one progressive radio or TV show that would interview him. Not one.
Interesting.
Not Democracy Now. Not
Democracy Now. Wow.
No, because it's in, because there's places that they can't go. Once you start peeling away the facade, then the whole house of cards comes down. So you start peeling over here, and before long, you're on to 9/11 and the Kennedy assassination. The deeper you go into this matrix of wrongful relationship, you start to see that it's part of a pattern. It's part of a pattern of secrecy, secret government, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. secrecy is where what they used to call in the old days evil thrives. So when you have characters like Mark Crispin Miller, who was definitely got his eyes open to the fact that if he's talking about a fundamental breach in the system, a fundamental injustice like stolen elections, mm-hmm. you can't talk about that.
That's incredible.
It impeaches the whole system.
Wow.
So I encourage people to go listen to this interview, find it on the archives with Mark Crispin Miller and Paul Craig Roberts, and you begin to see what they have in common.
Is it podcasted as well, Steve?
Yes, you can find it on iTunes.
Okay, good.
WikiPolitiki on iTunes.
And okay, good.
You'll see the one with Mark Crispin Miller and Paul Craig Roberts.
Excellent.
And it's amazing but not surprising that conversations like this are not happening, because the thing that is most dangerous to the power structure that's in power, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's obvious, you know? I mean, really, it's not a conspiracy
theory. No whispering behind your hands.
It's right there. They tell you. They're telling you what they're doing. It's collusion. It's legalized lawlessness. It's abuse of the law, twisting the law. I mean, again, if you want to do illegal activities and you're in political power, what do? You change the law. You change the law. So then what would have been illegal is now legal. That's all. So basically, that's what's been happening. Swami would call it ethic cleansing, where the ethical people have been cleansed out of the system.
Oh, that's scary. But tell me this, how long do you think this has gone on? Has it gone on for like thousands of years, or would you say it comes to peaks and valleys in history? Like,
well, I think
what was it like with FDR? Didn't he do
the vibration? This is a really good question.
Okay.
I think that the vibration of dominate or be dominated, it dates at least to the end of the matriarchal societies, when the agricultural societies were overrun by the marauding hordes and couldn't really defend themselves with merely the rake and the pitchfork. There was a basic reexamination of power, and that's when the patriarchy, which, you know, had the physical power to protect, took over. And one way or another, we've been ruled by the patriarchy for at least 5,000 years. So we all have the wounding of post-traumatic stress disorder. Swami calls it the residudu of do unto others before they can do unto you.
Gosh.
So that's the rule of gold rule. And so in our United States, you know, I know that there are people who go, well, you know, it was founded by a bunch of slaveholding white men. Well, you know, that's really a very stingy kind of analysis. It was founded by visionaries, spiritual visionaries, who called themselves Christians but were really deists, and adopted much of the American system from the native peoples here, the Iroquois Nation. And so they had the vision that really nobody really had before in Western civilization. Until that time, the rights that we had because they were given to us by the king, by a human ruler who got his divine right to rule from God. The founding fathers of America said, no, we have the same right to grow and thrive as the grass has to grow. It is a natural right that every individual has the right to life, liberty, and happy pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened during the American Revolution, it was really a revolution against the first multinational corporation. The British East India Company was a multinational corporation that had the military might of the British Army and Navy behind it. And they were exacting their toll on the colonists, essentially forcing them out of using their own colonial money, and forcing them to use the British pound. impoverishing them and financially enslaving them. And so the revolution really started by a very, very, very small number of people, was really about taking back political and economic sovereignty, which they had never had before, but they were taking that back. And so over the 200 and something year history of our country, the financial powers, the bankers, one might say, and the other
and the religious powers.
Well, a financial dominator power. We'll call it the dominator power, and they've all kind of gone together. The dominator power has recaptured it recaptured the economics of this country, some would say, when we established the Federal Reserve System and the national banking system that, you know, put us, rather than independent, put us at the behest of the European banking families.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of politics, I see a very interesting turning point where we went down the road of no grace at all.
Mm-hmm.
1944. I want to backtrack to 1933. And I wonder how many people have heard of the business plot. If you go to even Wikipedia, which is sometimes biased, go to Wikipedia and Google the business plot.
Okay.
What you will find is that in 1933, 1 year after Franklin D. Roosevelt took office for the New Deal, there were a group of people, including the DuPonts and several other high-level business people, that plotted to overthrow the government by creating an army of veterans led by a former Marine Corps general named Smedley Butler. And they were going to install Smedley Butler as the dictator.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, we had grace at that time because it turned out that Smedley Butler was a true hero. He wrote a book. If you go Google Smedley Butler, you'll find he wrote a book called War is a Racket. And he wrote about being a general during all of the wars in the early part of the century. He says, I wasn't a general for the United States. I was a general for United Fruit Company, U.S. Rubber, all of these companies looking to establish themselves in South and Latin America. And I and the American military did what the British military did for the British East India Company.
Hmm.
So what happened was he blew the whistle on the plot, even though he was the one that was going to be installed. And you'll see that there was a little bit of an investigation in Congress, but nothing happened. Okay. That was 1933. 1944 was a pivotal event. During the Democratic National Convention in 1944, the stage was set for just about everything that's happened over the past three quarters of a century in American foreign policy. Franklin Roosevelt, at that point, he had been elected to an unprecedented third term as president. Nobody before or since had ever been elected more than two times, and now I think there's a constitutional amendment limiting a president to two terms. But because we were in World War II, in the midst of something, he was reelected in a landslide in 1940 for a third term. Now we're 1944, a fourth term. And everybody knows that Roosevelt is in very, very, very poor health. And if elected, would not last the term.
Hmm.
His vice president from 1940 was somebody named Henry Wallace. And Henry Wallace was one of the few American visionary politicians. He had a progressive view. He had a progressive view of our role in the world, not as exploiters, but as genuine liberators, economic liberators. He had been Secretary of Agriculture, and then he became vice president in 1940, and he was Franklin Roosevelt's choice for 1944.
And was Franklin Roosevelt, just a little sidebar here, was Franklin Roosevelt known as a good guy? I read that he was. What do you think?
Well, I think that like everybody else in politics, it's always a mixed bag. The New Deal was hated by the bankers so much that they tried to overthrow him in his first year. That tells you something.
Mm-hmm.
He had the courage to speak out and stand up against the bankers. He had a very difficult task in uniting a Democratic Party that was a white racist party in the South and a immigrant party in the North. That's a longer conversation, but that's really what his task was.
Hmm.
So in 1944, everybody expected that Henry Wallace would be his choice, and it was his choice.
Mm-hmm.
But because he was in such poor health, he was not able to be active at the convention. And so what happened was the same people that tried to overthrow Roosevelt through a military coup decided that they would install their own vice presidential candidate who would become the inevitable president when FDR died, as he did less than a year later. And that was Harry Truman.
Hmm.
Harry Truman was a small thinker. He was from the Pendergast political machine in Missouri, in the Kansas City area of Missouri. It was, basically a corrupt pay-to-play machine. And Harry Truman worked his way up to become senator from Missouri. The people really in power, the ones who wanted to install the permanent military industrial state, knew that Henry Wallace would be against it. Henry Wallace would be for making peace with Russia after the war. Henry Wallace would not have dropped the bombs on Japan.
So they didn't want a peacenik in there, huh?
No. They wanted somebody who they could control,
mm-hmm.
who would, because again, as is normally the case, people were making a lot of money on the war economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a necessity.
Oh my. Mm-hmm.
The original bankers, original Bank of London, original bankers in Europe, 200 or 300 or 400 years ago, realized that the way that they made money was to loan money to countries at war.
And provide arms and all that that they would buy.
So that they could buy their arms. And so, again, it's like war puts you in the state of survival. And so in order to survive, think about it this way. You've been diagnosed with a horrible illness. The treatment is hundreds of thousands of dollars. Your insurance doesn't cover it. You want to raise the money to save your life. So when countries are confronted like that, and often, as we've seen, these war situations are intentionally generated,
mm-hmm.
then you become you're susceptible to the money loan scam when you need money very, very, very badly. And so usually what happens after wars is that countries go into debt. World War II happened because there was so much debt from World War I that was, since Germany lost, those debts were laid on Germany.
Hmm.
And because of the resulting dissatisfaction and bad karma, somebody like Adolf Hitler could rise to power and say, look at how they did it to us. We are now going to take our freedom back and blah, 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 and on. It's a never ending vicious cycle of viciousness.
And a lot of people on our side and on the British and so on aided and helped Hitler rise to power, didn't they?
Well, yes, and those were the people, the banks, Averill Harriman,
the Ford Company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Henry Ford, George Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush. So you start to see that these people had very questionable alliances, and all you need to do is scratch the surface a little bit. So mm-hmm. in 1944, through a series of manipulations, Harry Truman became the vice president, and the entire history of our country since then has been has grown out of the military-industrial complex that was institutionalized during the Truman administration, during the Eisenhower administration, and even, you know, Eisenhower spoke of the military-industrial complex.
He warned of it, didn't he?
Yeah. You know, and you know, that was, let's see, 57 years ago, you know, half a century ago that he gave his farewell speech. And so, you know, this is what we're dealing with. By the time John Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, according to James Douglas, who wrote the book JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Mattered, the CIA had infiltrated just about every institution in society. So not just the military, but academia, et cetera, et cetera. And now imagine...
Is that when they were running cocaine through to pay for the war effort from...
That was even before. Basically what they were doing is, now imagine you're an academic, okay? You're a young academic, you know, you have prestige, and you get a visit from somebody from the government, and that person says, you have an opportunity to really serve your country now. Mm. We're involved in this global war against communism, and we see that you're an anti-communist, and we would like to engage you. You're not going to be doing anything dangerous. All you're going to be doing is gathering information and reporting to us. And then there may be some time from time to time that we will ask you to communicate something, blah, blah, blah. But generally, this is purely secret. This is a secret thing. You're serving your country. And most people would go, wow, what an opportunity. Especially in the 1940s, 1950s, and 1960s.
Sure.
Think about it this way. Daniel Ellsberg, who was the hero who spilled the Pentagon Papers that exposed the run-up to the war in Vietnam. He was one of those people. He was one of those people who was an academic who was recruited by the government. And what happened was he, you know, as time went on, he went, I don't like what I'm doing. And that's why he spilled the beans.
So I'm saying
that really, if we want things to be changed, there's a three-step program, and what's good about that is it's mathematically proven to work four times faster than 12-step.
What is it?
And the three-step program is awareness, intention, and action. First of all, awareness. One of the greatest crime perpetrated by the Democratic Party and progressives, and I'm including Democracy Now! And all of these supposedly progressive left-wing entities. Mm-hmm. The greatest crime is in covering up the nefarious plots that have been called conspiracy theories. They didn't support Mark Crispin Miller. They haven't supported other people who've had these very, very provable instances of government malfeasance. Mm-hmm. They haven't had the courage to do it.
Well, do you think it's because they're bought? Just like,
well, I think there's different levels. Mm-hmm. I think John Rappaport, who's an alternative right journalist, I don't always agree with him, but there was one article that he wrote was very significant. And he said that when he was first starting out as a journalist, one of his friends, also in journalism, one of his friends took a job with a major news agency. And this is really a coup. It was a great job. And what happened to his friend is his friend began to realize, you know, like he'd pitch a couple of story ideas and he'd get this look. And at some point he realized what the boundaries were. Mm-hmm. So people who want to keep their jobs, people who want to rise in the ranks, they self-censor. That's how that works. And then if they don't, then they have the opportunity to recant. So back in 2004, Van Jones signed a document, which I signed and 98 other leaders signed, calling for a reinvestigation of 9/11. The 9/11 Truth Commission, the 9/11 Commission report needs to be revised. We want a new investigation. We don't buy the story. In 2009, Van Jones was appointed to some sub-cabinet level position in the Obama administration. A year or so later, somebody found out, somebody discovered that he had signed this document. He immediately lost his job.
Oh, my.
And then he...
Even in the Obama administration, a lot of us would have thought that wouldn't... It was a safe place.
You know, and it's like people, I actually heard somebody say this, that, well, if 9/11 were an inside job, wouldn't we have heard about that on NPR?
You're like, hello, no.
Right. So NPR is simply, it's an inside the matrix, inside the box thing that allows people to have different opinions about certain social issues, but other areas are verboten. And so basically we have an extremely managed press.
Can I interrupt here? Because you know I came in from Canada. And even as a child, when we came to visit our American cousins, we knew, I was like 8 or 10 or something, we knew that Americans didn't hear news, real news. And that hasn't changed from my perspective.
It's really interesting that in Canada they figured that out. We went to Europe.
And we were
little kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's been this stupidization program going on for a long time. Mm-hmm. And
is that so we don't fight back here? Is that the deal?
Exactly. So we have the illusion of democracy. We call it democracy. So I'm going to read you something here.
Please.
Because it's very, very significant. I've been working with some people locally here in Santa Rosa, California, to create a transpartisan conversation, a conversation, you know, where people from different sides get together and learn to listen to one another with respect and so on. And so I just got a call back. I just got an email back from somebody. And this is a right-wing conservative from the East Coast. And he says, I have been reading, listening, and watching much of what Sean, Arthur, and Steve have shared these past couple of weeks. I'm thinking on the ideas in a way that perhaps I have not done before. I'm opening my mind to new possibilities. I'm trying to do so in my own terms. I realize I don't want to be a George Babbitt.
Who's George Babbitt?
Babbitt was a character in Sinclair Lewis's book that made fun of the provincialism of America during the 1920s.
Okay.
And then he says, I've been reading and listening to Steve's blogs and podcasts and resonate with much of what he shares.
Yay!
One point he makes in his piece, it's time for we the people to face the music and dance together, that I think is essential, is contained in the following paragraph. So I'm going to read you the paragraph that sparked this guy, who's a right-wing conservative, who his brother-in-law has never been able to talk to begin to look differently.
Okay.
This is my quote after the election. And then I reached out to my friends and colleagues who chose Donald Trump as their lesser evil. In the atmosphere of polarization and misunderstanding, fed by the media on both sides, the easiest thing in the world is to see and fixate on the shadow of our opponent. It's in seeing and acknowledging our own shadow that true learning and breakthrough takes place. So he says after that, being humble and being willing to learn from others, especially those who you place on the other side, is going to be much more productive than the constant shrill debate on points that have been talked and talked and talked. This is a guy who has been a journalist who's worked for the Washington Times.
Wow, great.
The Mooney publication.
Conservative. Are you referring to that group?
It's run by Sung Myung Moon.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Right. That's who owns it.
Oh, wow.
And so this is very significant that somebody is going, wow, somebody pointed me in a different direction. How about that? And so I'm very encouraged by that. And I've known that when you listen respectfully to people, you speak with them heart to heart, you don't pull any punches, you say what you think, rather than hiding and hedging, you build bridges. It's very interesting how that works. So this is the work that has to be done, because people on all sides are waking up to, we've been hoodwinked by winking hoods. Little black winking hood, whatever it is, or little dark side winking hood.
So we all need to take improv and learn the art of yes and as well, right?
That's true.
Yeah, it's everything you hear, you need to respond that way, not in oppositional.
Yes, exactly. So that's, that's really where we're at. And mainstream media has consistently and intentionally prevented that conversation.
You bet.
It's prevented civil conversations. The closest we've gotten, by the way, is Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect.
Yeah, I guess so, eh?
And they've moved in that direction. But that's still people yelling at each other often.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it's a beginning of a conversation where everybody's in the same room and nobody walks out.
Mm-hmm. Not afraid of a good conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. So anyway, I've been blabbing along here.
I love it. What I'm interested in, everything you're saying, you're talking about the progress that we considered progress, but it really wasn't progress. Is there a current of change that you and Bruce Lipton did spontaneous evolution together? And is there a current of change leading us to being able to pop up and move out of this little confinement?
Well, again, we are, as Bruce would tell us, we are in that caterpillar turning to butterfly state. We're in the chrysalis right now.
Okay.
There's chaotic. It certainly looks chaotic. And caterpillar is falling apart all around us. And most of what we see on the news is about caterpillar debris.
Mm-hmm.
That's really most of what we're seeing on the news right now.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
And we're not seeing the imaginal cells of the butterfly coming together, and yet they are. I'm involved in at least a half a dozen projects where people are looking to make the connections to create a worldwide movement of movements to transition to a earth-friendly, human-friendly, heart-based, functional, healthy, and sane economy, ecology, and political order.
Mm-hmm.
There's that famous quote from Dwight Eisenhower, the people of the world want peace so much that someday their leaders will have to give that to them. And now we have the ways and means for mass communication, the democratization of communication through the personal device and the cell phone. There's as many cell phones as there are human beings on the planet. Really
Isn't crazy. That remarkable, huh?
Yeah.
So, I think it's really interesting because there's cell phones, and I believe that the cellular influence deep within us is also being activated. So I think it's a wonderful metaphorical, training wheels kind of situation.
Yes, exactly. And so right now there's many, and think of it as the time in the 1890s where so many experimenters were out there trying to create an airplane.
Yeah.
You know, we had, and then these two bicycle mechanics who didn't do much else after flying. They really didn't. They really didn't develop their idea. They simply went and did it, and that became the. That's what broke it through the soundless barrier, and all of a sudden we had flight. But we're at that point where there are many, many people who are thinking there needs to be a unifying movement. There needs to be new institutions in society that give us the ability to overgrow the two-party system. My friend Richard Lang has a new book coming out in January called Virtual America. Mm-hmm. It's about a national town square virtual where every American, be independent, non-corporate, non-governmental organization, independent from mainstream media, that would guarantee a voice and a vote for every American citizen as verifiable as your bank card. So Richard's project is I'm on his team to bring this thing about. It's one of those things that imagine 50 or 70 or 100 million people going on this one site saying, we want this. And you know,
it's a bit revolutionary, don't you think?
It's evolutionary.
Good,
it's the next evolution of freedom of assembly, because in the real world you can't really assemble anymore.
No. Nope.
But nobody is going to stop people from assembling on this, at this virtual town square, and being given a voice and a vote.
And how do we get into that? How can we get involved? Is it already happening? Is it beginning to happen?
It's going to be the book is coming out in January.
Mm-hmm.
We are now currently putting together our executive team and a roundtable group of luminaries.
Well, it's interesting because you were talking about how, like, I know this too, that even NPR gets squelched and so does Democracy Now! And so on and so forth. What about books?
Well, I think that anybody can write a book these days. Anyone can write a book or publish a book. And that's good news and bad news. And the good news is anybody can publish a book. And the bad news is to get that book to be viewed by, quote unquote, the mainstream is an entirely other task.
Yeah,
now, if it were 20 years ago or more, Bruce Lipton's Biology of Belief and Spontaneous Evolution, we would have been interviewed on NPR. But no. NPR is dedicated to the religion of scientism. And have already decided that people who have ideas like Bruce Lipton are quacks.
Wow.
So when Spontaneous Evolution came out in 2009, the only big national radio or TV or any kind of show that we were on was George Noory's Coast to Coast. Because they're designed to handle weird stuff.
Well, it's so interesting because Coast to Coast with Art Bell way back was it was always in danger of being blown up and all that sort of stuff. But it's developed the biggest listenership all over the world. And with George Noory, it still is getting bigger and bigger all over the world. Like, what does that tell the powers that be, right?
Well, I think what it tells the powers that be is that they better close down the internet.
Oh yeah, I guess so, eh?
But no, I'm kind of being jokey about that. But
that's
really
not funny.
The thing is that this whole net neutrality thing and all of that is designed to essentially legitimize and solidify institutional privilege inside this worldwide web, so that alternative news, or that is anything that they don't like, whether it really is awful Nazi stuff or whether it's simply telling the truth about stuff that they don't want to hear the truth about. They don't want you to know the truth. So they'll make sure that some Nazis infiltrate your group, and then they can go, well, here, you're just, you're with that group or communists or whatever. So I think that right now we're looking at the most important thing that can happen is an independent voice and an independent space for regular citizens to have conversations like I had via email with this guy on the East Coast who I've been told, oh, he won't talk to me or he won't discuss these things with me. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, he's thinking. Why is he thinking? Because I communicated to him in a respectful way, and I indicated that there are silos on both sides that perpetuate the polarization.
And he responded because he's got a heart and he has a I guess I keep dropping back into spontaneous evolution. He's a part of that awakening that's going on, is he not?
Yeah, and the thing is, I love integral thought. Ken Wilber is brilliant genius, and that track is a great teacher for us right now, and the idea that we evolve on a spiral. But I think one of the things that they miss, a really, really key thing that they miss, is connecting at the heart. That it doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter how primitive, quote unquote, how unevolved your belief system is. When that connection is made at the heart, any human being can evolve into an enlightened state. And they get to jump these other phases of, having to, have this level of intellectual understanding or that level.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a quantum leap, actually.
Yeah, and it has to do with connecting at the heart. As a quick example, Patricia Sun, who is a brilliant and...
Yes, we've had her on the show, actually.
Yeah, very wise teacher.
Very wise.
This happened back in the 1990s. She shows up at some New Age bookstore to make a presentation. And the bookstore, and there's four fundamentalist Christian picketing outside. And she says, I'm going to go talk with them. And the bookstore owner says, nah, you can't talk with those people. She says, well, I'm going to do it anyway. She went out there, had a conversation for 10 or 15 minutes. And after about 15 minutes, three of the four pickets put their signs down, hugged Patricia, and said, wow, you're saying just what Jesus said.
Aww.
And the fourth one kept picketing.
So three quarters of a group is not too bad, right?
That's right. 75% of us are susceptible to love and respect.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really true. I really like that.
So that's what we have to be cultivating. That's the main thing.
Well, what I saw on Facebook today? I'm not a big Facebook fan, but I flick through it to see about clients and so on and friends. But there was a big video of women in the Middle East, women, Palestinians and Israelis, women. Mm-hmm. And they've apparently been marching to Jerusalem since the 8th of October or something. And they were hilarious. I mean, I didn't get time to see the whole entire thing, but I'm suggesting we all look it up because I started crying because it was so full of love and heart. And there they were, and some of them in their long robes and so on, you know, how they dress. And they were boogieing and they were, dancing with each other. And, and the Jewish, very intellectual women, and they're horsing around with these Palestinian women and vice versa. And it was so touching. And they've got big signs saying, we're waging peace.
And you see, that's really, once we begin to, the Swami would say, well, there are no sides, only angles. And when we view it from the right angle, we're all on the same side.
Yeah.
So basically, rather than drawing the lines on this tribe versus that tribe, which is how we've done it, mm-hmm. A better way to look at it as it's really a contest between those who want to be on the battlefield and those who want to step off the battlefield and work together.
And let their wings unfold.
Yeah, and that's the butterfly, mm-hmm. stepping off the battlefield. We have the opportunity every day to step off the battlefield. When we're given an opportunity to argue with somebody, whether it be a close family member or a stranger that we whose comment we don't like on Facebook or so on. We are given that choice how we want to engage.
Mm-hmm.
It's this today on my show today, on my Wiki Politiki show today that aired today. It was called Christmas in the Trenches.
Oh, good.
And it began with the Shanti Norman's version of that beautiful John McCutcheon song that tells the story about how soldiers in the first winter of World War One, the first Christmas of World War One, were able to break the trance of dehumanization and rehumanized themselves and one another by singing Christmas carols together in two languages together, coming out and sharing treats and whiskey, playing soccer, showing photos of their families, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, those and things are so touching.
Broken.
Mm.
Yeah. So what we need is more of that. So that's
do you think if we have enough of us, is this where the spontaneous evolution comes up? If enough of us, it's like a contagion.
Yeah, Swami calls it creating critical mass before we hit critical massacre.
Very good, Swami. But it is possible, isn't it, Steve?
That's what we're going for. You know, the thing is that I think people realize if you're looking at the big picture, it's the only game in town. You know, people are going, well, you know, the economy, my job. If we lose the earth, there goes the GDP. Okay, there we that should have the that should give us perspective on the issue. So that's where we're at, and we are we either are going to be subject to the caterpillar, or we're going to feed and build and weave the butterfly. And that to me seems to be the as my hero Roy Campanella would say, the onlyest game in town.
I love that. Now, I don't want you to be finished here without finishing what you started to say about Snowden. Is he an angel? Is he a butterfly? Is he a caterpillar? What's the deal with him?
I recommend that you go watch the interview that Katie Couric did with Edward Snowden last year.
Okay.
And I believe that you'll come away from that with the view of him as one of a truly, truly courageous individual. And there's so few, of those that it will strike you how courageous he is.
I love that. And courageous means just what you said, coming from the heart, right?
Filled with the masculine aspect of heart and love energy.
That's wonderful. Now, listen, how do people get into your blog and all of those kinds of things?
Two things. First of all, go find me on Wiki Politiki Radio.
Okay.
And best way to go, you can go to iTunes and find the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and I know you're going to post this on your site, you're going to, then what we want is contact me at info@wakeuplaughing.com.
Okay.
And then we'll put you on our list and so on. We'll have a wiki email list after the first of the year.
Well, what I really loved is you talking about these five groups or something, networks and people speaking from either side or both sides to learn commonality. I really want to get involved in some of that. And this women's stuff going on, I want to be involved in that. And I'm not right now, so I'm going to follow you. What do you think of that?
There's actually an organization called Living Room Conversations, and they've established some really helpful guidelines for how to go about doing this. Inviting people who are in your social network who might be of a different political persuasion, so that there's the connection, you know, there's a heart connection there. And then bringing those people into a living room conversation. There's a certain protocol to establish rapport and respect, and then it goes from there.
Well, it certainly is the time to do all that. I just feel like it's time to kind of flap our wings, move the vibration above what's been, you know, how we've run the world, or the world has been run, so to speak. Okay?
Yeah.
I thank you so much for running your radio show. You've got some wonderful guests and great archives, and you know so much. So it's a real gift.
I thought you were going to say running your mouth. I thought you were going to say good thing. Nah. I was walking my mouth earlier. So.
You were. No, I really enjoyed everything you said, but you just got me asking a lot of questions still. So we'll have to talk to you again if you'll come back.
I will. Thank you so much, Veronica, for the work that you're doing. And then helping shift happen.
Yeah, and thank you for all you do. Many blessings and merry, merry season. I call it the season of rebirth. That's my favorite phrase for it.
There it is. That's
there
if
you
all
go.
Else fails, there's always reincarnation. Yeah,
right. They're caterpillaring. That's what we're doing.
Okay.
But bye-bye, Steve. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. That was Steve Behrman with a lot of wisdom about our society these days. Thank you for listening to Paradigm Shifters.